It's late spring, or maybe it's summer. Let's go for a sunset walk. Maybe we'll pass a pond or a creek. It's pleasant. Then a flicker catches our eye, and another. We're mesmerized. It's that time of year. Are fireflies in the memories you're making? If so, what species? And how many species? Yes, there's more than one species of firefly. You might be surprised at how many you've seen and how different they are from one another. I'm Rob Diaz de Villegas, and you're listening to Coast to Canopy, an ecology podcast from WFSU Public Media. Today is all about Florida fireflies. Joining me today is Dave Almquist, invertebrate zoologist and assistant data manager for the Florida Natural Areas Inventory, or FNAI. Welcome, Dave.
Hello, Rob.
All right, so Dave, you're an entomologist, right? So I have to ask you this question. Are fireflies really flies?
Well, fireflies that are also called lightning bugs are not flies nor true bugs. They're actually beetles. And I am also, besides an entomologist, which is somebody who studies insects, I'm also a coleopterist, which is somebody who specializes in beetles. And fireflies are beetles. But for many years, I pretty much ignored them, in part because I thought other people were taking care of researching them in Florida, and I figured I would concentrate on other things so I wouldn't duplicate efforts. But then a few years ago, I started getting interested in them and realized how little there was known about them, and I've been chasing them ever since.
Gotcha. What sparked your interest?
I think it was a blue ghost firefly that somebody told me about up near Havana. And I quickly looked online and was like, there are no blue ghost fireflies here. They must not know what they're talking about. But I went up there, and sure enough, there were blue ghost fireflies up there, or at least some kind of a ghost. The jury's still a little bit out on which species it is. Anyway, my finding out that there was a species of beetle in Florida that I had no idea occurred in Florida, that started my interest. And then I kept searching and finding new things, and that just spurred me on even further.
Right, right. And so you were spurred on by finding a specific species. How many species of fireflies are there? I think a lot of us would just think fireflies were the species, right? So how many species of fireflies, say, are in Florida?
So I knew that there were more than one species, but I did not know or remember quite how many there were. And there are more than 50 and possibly as many as 60 species in Florida.
Wow. We were talking a little bit before this when we were doing the pre-production. Just in your neighborhood, how many have you found?
I think I've found 7 or 8, although one of those is not a flashing firefly, which maybe we'll get into later.
Oh, yeah.
But I think 7 or 8 right in my little neighborhood in the middle of Tallahassee.
Okay. So any one of us in Tallahassee might encounter multiple different types of fireflies. And so when they're flashing like that, I mean, what are they doing?
So most of what you see flashing, if you see fireflies anywhere, are males, and they are flying around flashing, trying to attract females. It's sort of like a dating site where they're putting themselves out there, and the females are usually hunkered down right near the ground or maybe perched a little bit up on some vegetation, depending on the species. And they're just kind of sitting there waiting, and if they like what they see, they may give a little brief response flash, letting the male know that, oh yeah, you look good, come over here. Different fireflies have different flash patterns, how long they flash, how long the interval is between flashes, sometimes the shape of the flash. There are some that swoop up in a J shape when they flash. There's the ghost species. They fly just barely above the ground, and they don't flash so much as put out like a continuous glow. It almost looks like a line of glowing, and then they stop. There's one that to me sort of reminds me of a 4th of July sparkler a little bit, because instead of just a flash or a double flash, it kind of sputters as it moves. There are also different colors to an extent, a little more towards, they're mainly green, but a little more towards maybe orangish almost. Some appear yellow, and then some a little more towards blue. And so the males are out there flying, trying to get females to respond to them, and that's the main reason that they flash. You, in general, unless you're looking very, very hard, you're not going to see the females. But different species flash not only their flash patterns or how bright or the interval between them or how long each flash is. Some of them are like almost instantaneous, whereas other ones are more drawn out, and then there's the ghost ones that are kind of ridiculously glowing. But something else that's characteristic, and it is characteristic of certain species, those different patterns and everything else. But another thing that's characteristic is how high they flash. Again, the ghost ones, they're right near the ground. There are some called treetop flashers, and they live up to their name, where they are way out of net reach, way in the treetops. So the height is diagnostic per species to an extent. There's a species active in my backyard right now that stays about maybe 10 feet from the ground, mostly a little bit lower, like around head height, well, at least my head. And then there are other ones that start off low, but they will end up way up in the trees. And then there are other ones that only fly within a certain like a certain height above the ground within certain parameters. The time in relation to sunset that they flash can also be very diagnostic. The main species that's active in my backyard right now starts just a little bit after sunset and pretty much is done flashing about 15 or 20 minutes later. So if you're not exactly in that right spot at that right time looking for them, you're never going to see them. There are other similar species, similar in their habits, that start right at official sunset. Like you could figure out what official sunset is by the first flash of them that you see, and they only flash for about 15 minutes. And if you think about right at official sunset, it's actually still relatively light out. So they're very hard to see unless you're really staring straight at them. So you can tell a lot from their flashes.
Right. So if you're just walking, you know, maybe you're taking a late night walk or you're out camping and you see, you know, a firefly, you can start thinking about these things. You could look at the color and the pattern and how high it is, right? Is this something that's easily capturable on a phone or any other sort of camera?
So it depends, because I was just talking about ones that come out very early. There are other species that do not come out until about an hour after official sunset when it's pretty much truly dark out. And if there is no real moon and it's one of those species, I've had a very difficult time getting video on my phone of their flashes unless I could get relatively close to them. The ones that come out more around dusk when there's still a little more ambient light and stuff, those I can use my phone to record their flash patterns, which also, if you have your location setting on in your phone, then you know exactly where you took that video later on. And then you can very carefully go through the video and go, okay, this one flashes very briefly, 1 to 2 seconds apart, and looks like it was about 6 feet above the ground. And then you have a wealth of information to help you identify that firefly. Everybody's phone is different, and I don't want to get into a tutorial on phone videos. But for any video of fireflies, if you can find settings in your phone to increase the resolution as well as the frames per second, those things help a lot in taking firefly videos.
So the fireflies, you know, they flash at different times of night in different locations and different patterns. Now, do they have a different seasonality as well, like a lot of other insects and animals, as far as when we might see them flashing?
They do. And getting back to how long they flash, with some of them only flashing for, or displaying, we'll call it, for about 15 minutes. There are others that come, especially the ones that come out at true dark. I've seen them at 2:30 a.m. Now, why I was hiking around in the woods at 2:30 a.m., guess what? Looking for fireflies. So they fly for a very long time during the evening. So similarly, there are some fireflies that you can find during maybe most of the warmer months of the year. And then there are other species that are only active for maybe a few weeks, if that.
And so, where do we find fireflies typically? They're not everywhere. They favor kind of moist areas, or like where are we likely to find fireflies? Or does it vary species to species?
It definitely varies species to species. In general, they seem to be near water, not all the time, but in general. I don't know if people know it, but beetles have complete metamorphosis, and that's just a fancy term for basically being like a butterfly, as far as they have a larval stage, which is basically a caterpillar. Oh, they have an egg, and then they have a larval stage, then they go into something basically like a cocoon, and then they come out as an adult. And so the adults usually only live a couple of weeks. I don't want to make any unqualified statements about fireflies, because anytime you say fireflies do this, there's one that doesn't do that. And anytime you say fireflies don't do this, there's one that does it. But in general, I think most of the adults only live a couple weeks or so. The larvae, which is the sort of caterpillar stage for them, they can live for some species up to 2 years. And what they do is crawl around on the ground, under leaf litter, down in the dirt, up on trees, and they kind of look to me like a pangolin or maybe an armadillo. But if you know what a pangolin looks like, that's what a lot of them look like to me. And they are predatory. Most of them are predatory on snails and slugs and similar. The adults, most of the adults don't even eat at all. But then there are other adults that they like a little bit of nectar and pollen. And then there are other adults in genus Phocturus have been called femme fatales. They mimic the flashes of other firefly species and draw in the males that think that it's a female of their species, and they actually eat the males.
Oh, wow. So they need to be in leaf litter for up to 2 years. Talk about the importance of having that habitat preserved for them, like, in your yard.
I would say that if you want to promote fireflies in your yard, that the number one thing would be don't use pesticides all over your yard, which means don't spread stuff around in your grass to kill grubs and stuff. Because if you're spreading around things that are killing grubs, it's probably going to kill firefly larvae. If you are spraying or having your yard sprayed for mosquitoes, they're going to spray right after dark, and that's right when a lot of the fireflies come up. So to me, that's the number one thing. Leaf litter is somewhat important, but they could probably find some leaf litter around the edges of your yard. If you don't want your yard to, if you don't want your lawn to have a whole bunch of leaves in it, just push some of the leaves off to the side and stuff, and they'll find them, I think. Another thing is that light pollution is somewhat of an issue, but I think it may be species specific because, again, I've found about seven species of fireflies in my neighborhood in Tallahassee. Obviously, there are streetlights all over the place, and I've watched them fly right under streetlights that were on. So I don't know how important light pollution is to them, but I think maybe more to the later flying species. And it's a good idea to decrease light pollution near your house anyway, because you're pretty much drawing insects to your house, and then they're going to try to crawl into your house. To me, the best way to do that is if you have a light that's on all night long that you don't want to have on a motion sensor, see if you can get a yellow light, because they attract many less insects. But motion sensor lights are the best bet because they're not on all night. You still have the security of them coming on when they're needed if someone comes in your yard or you get home with late night groceries or I don't know what. But I think those would be the two best.
So that's at night. So at night we see them, their lights sometimes very high up. During the day, we might see them and not even know what they are. What do they look like?
A picture is worth a thousand words, and I wish I could give you a picture. But one thing that they all the adults that actually become adults, one thing they have in common is that their thorax or pronotum, the second segment of insects, has a kind of hood or something or projection that comes out over their head. So if you're looking at them from the top, you won't actually see their head. You'll just see the edge of their thorax most of the time, and unless they're moving around. But if they're just kind of sitting there during the daytime, you'll see that hood come out, or you'll see their head come out from under that hood when they start moving around. And hood isn't quite the right term, but that's what it reminds me of, is sort of like a beetle hoodie.
Right. And then for anyone listening too, we'll have photos on the WFSU ecology blog. That's wfsu.org/ecology blog, which will go along with this podcast, and we'll have plenty of visuals. So now I want to shift gears a little bit from our neighborhoods to out in the forest. I know, I photograph bees a lot myself, and I find there's certain bees I find in my house, and then I go out in the forest and I find sometimes that there's some really cool specialized bees, or sometimes even kind of rare bees. And so, is it the same with fireflies?
Yes, I'm pretty proud of having found as many species as I have within Tallahassee in my neighborhood. I think only one of those may be somewhat uncommon. But yes, if there are species that we know relatively little about, but they definitely occur in kind of more rare habitats and more pristine habitats, basically. There's one, I think it's called the pointy-lobed firefly. Let me make sure. Yes, pointy-lobed firefly. I'm pretty sure that's the one that I looked up. And it seems, from the little knowledge that we have, that it seems to like a marshy area, maybe a cypress swampy area, right next to some very dry sandhill type of habitat. We at FNA are tracking that species, which means we try to gather information about it and gather locations for it and things like that. But it hasn't been seen in decades. So I would love to find that. But that's one example. There's the Florida intertidal firefly, Micronaspis floridana. It's only found in salt marsh or salt marsh slash mangrove habitats, and only in peninsular Florida. Although I really want to go down and look in some of the salt marshes down near St. Marks, because I wonder if maybe it's hiding out there just because nobody's looked for it. There's also an ant-loving scrub firefly, which the females do not fly. Their wings and their elytra, the elytra for beetles are basically what you think of as sort of the shell, but they kind of split that apart, and then their flying wings come out from under it. So the ant-loving scrub firefly, which is Pleiotomides needhami, the females are flightless, and they live in ant nests. And they come out at night and glow. And the males, which do fly, come by and they glow also. They don't really flash. And they only live in scrub habitat in the peninsula, and scrub habitat is very, very dry and sandy. So we were talking about leaf litter and habitats and wetlands and stuff like that. This is like the opposite end of the spectrum, where, well, let's see, we need some humidity and we don't have leaf litter because it's very sandy. So we're going to go hang out in an ant nest.
So interesting. And so a lot of these places too, by a salt marsh, as the sun is setting, might be kind of a time where there's a lot of mosquitoes as well. Maybe they're not observed because it's like a hard, not always a fun place to be for some of these places, it sounds like.
And no-see-ums.
Oh yeah.
No-see-ums can be deadly sometimes. And you don't want to put on repellent in general, because if you have to get close to the fireflies to try to catch one, you don't want them to say, "Oh, he stinks, I'm gonna fly away."
Right. And so you mentioned FNA and tracking species. So explain that part of your job. So what does FNA do as far as tracking rare and sensitive species in Florida?
Well, what we try to do is we try to pay attention to the ones that are of the most conservation need. And sometimes that's difficult, especially with insects, to figure out because of the lack of information. Not enough people go out looking for insects, not enough people go out and collect insects. And while I definitely don't like killing insects, collecting insects is a necessity. Really, a lot of insects, we would know a lot more about them, and they would be, we'd be better able to protect them if we had more specimens of them.
Right. But that, I mean, you're talking about responsible collection of specimens by trained professional people.
Not just going out and collecting everything or canopy fogging or anything like that. No, but just collecting so that you can positively identify them. One of the problems with fireflies is even if you have all of the flash data of, you know, the time after sunset and how high and how often and everything else, and you have really, really good pictures. You know, say you're using a really nice digital SLR with a macro lens on it, and you get really good close-ups. There are still some fireflies that you cannot identify, even with excellent pictures and information like that. And people have been delving into their DNA lately and finding out that, oh, wow, there are some that the only way you can tell them apart is DNA.
That's true. A lot of
anyway,
insects.
Getting back to what FNA does, as far as tracking rare species, is we try to pay attention to the ones that are of the most conservation concern, and we rank them with various conservation-related attributes, and then we try to keep track of their locations or populations. We call them occurrences, and an occurrence is very similar to a population. And so that way we can say, okay, well, this species has only four known populations. Maybe there are some we haven't found, but that's pretty rare. Whereas this other species, well, it's got 20 or 30 populations, so it's not as rare. Or, well, this one has 10 populations, but they're all in a tiny, tiny little area, like only in the Western Panhandle or something, whereas another species may have 10 populations spread out through the state, and so it seems much more likely that there would be undiscovered populations, if that makes sense.
Right. Are there any that are Florida endemic, meaning that they're only found in Florida?
Any fireflies specifically? Yes. Let's see, the Everglades brownwing firefly, which is Photurus floridana, that's another one that has not been seen in decades. And the ant-loving scrub firefly that I was talking about before are both endemics. There are probably other endemics that I just don't have on my radar right now.
FNA only has so much staff, right? And there's only so many biologists working in the state of Florida. And I know how I met you and we started working together was a segment on you use sometimes citizen science data. So talk about how you use data collected by ordinary citizens.
So we have been relying more and more on iNaturalist. Again, there are a lot of insects that cannot be told apart from photographs, but there are a good number that can be, and we've been relying more and more on iNaturalist data. It's a little bit difficult because iNaturalist is a little bit of a free-for-all as far as identifications and such, but if we can see a record and see a picture and decide, yes, that definitely is that species, that helps us a lot. And having all these people out there collecting these data, even though we have to sort through things because of misidentifications or whatever, we get a lot of valuable data from iNaturalist and similar places now.
Could iNaturalist identify a firefly species based on a flash pattern? If I took a video out, you know, in a salt marsh and I saw flashing of certain colors, could that be identified, or is that too ambiguous?
I would not enter that into our database and QC pass it, but it could still be valuable information, or say a fuzzy photograph on iNaturalist along with some flash data that makes it sound like, oh, that probably is that species. It's still good information in part because I or someone can go out there to the same place and see if they can do a little more documentation, if that makes sense.
Right.
And sorry to switch tracks, but I forgot when we were talking about firefly flashes and all that, there are species that do not flash. I don't know if you were going to ask me about this in the future. But,
I was, yeah.
Okay.
Now's as good a time.
But,
yeah.
There are species that do not flash at all, and they actually come out during the daytime. One is called Propygia minuta, or the flower elf. Another one is called the woodland Lucy, or Lucidota atra. And to me, the coolest one is called the tropic traveler. It's Tenaspis angularis, and it's somewhat of an odd-looking firefly because it's very, very wide, more of like an oval shape than elongated. And I found one in my yard years ago, took a cell phone picture of it, and didn't really, I knew it was a firefly, but I didn't quite know which one it was. Anyway, I found out it was relatively rarely found. And I showed the picture to my son, Lucas, who was like 9 years old. And a couple days later, he came home from school and he had this cup in his hand. And I was like, what is he? He's like, I have something for you. And he didn't tell me what it was. And I opened it up and I'm looking in, and he found that same species. I've only seen it once, and I've done a lot of looking around in Florida. I've only seen it once, and he found it at his school in Tallahassee. I thought that was pretty cool. The specimen that he collected, we ended up giving to Mark Branham at University of Florida, and he ended up using it for DNA analysis to figure out how fireflies are related to each other.
And this is true for a lot of insects, right? I mean, I know that from photographing bees a lot, that I think I get these great photos sometimes and I put it up there, and when it's identified, it's only a genus level identification. You know, they cannot tell the is that true of a lot of insects?
Yes, really, the vast majority of insects. I think the estimate for the number of terrestrial and freshwater insects in Florida is somewhere around 12,500 or something like that. And if you think about the tiny little insects that you've probably seen that you have no idea what they are because they're just little specks that are moving around, basically the vast majority of insects, you're probably not going to be able to identify from a photograph, unless maybe you have a really good macro lens or something. But with a phone or something at this point, there's no way most of them can be identified positively by photographs.
But that's not to say that we shouldn't try, right? I think sometimes I photograph a lot of, say, longhorn bees. And man, for the longest time, I didn't get species level identifications for longhorn bees. And then every once in a while, you do, or sometimes it's a really interesting species, right? So you're not saying, are you saying, is there a value in taking photos anyway, even if it's hard to tell them apart?
It's definitely valuable, because especially if you're sort of a naturalist or someone who's really interested in insects, but you're not a specialist, you don't know which ones. Oh, you know, that one you have to dissect and look at the male genitalia, or oh, that one you can't really tell apart unless you look at some tiny little minute part on its underside that you can only see with a microscope. But if you're, you know, a naturalist interested in insects, or even an entomologist, but don't really know the group that you're looking at, get as many pictures as you can and get them up there, because, as you said, it could be something where somebody's going to say, well, yeah, we think it's sort of this, or somebody may go, oh, that's this really neat species, and you just don't know ahead of time.
Right. And so if you're photographing a firefly or any insect, what's the best way? I mean, a lot of insects you approach, they fly away. So I know I do it with a DSLR with like a zoom lens, but not everybody has that. What's the best way if you just have a phone and you see an insect and you don't want to frighten it away? What's the best way to get a good photo of it, or a good set of photos?
Why don't I talk about getting photos of fireflies? Because talking about getting photos of insects is a little bit broader.
Right.
Usually, what I do with fireflies is if I see one, I try to track that firefly with my eyes, watching and getting an idea of its flash pattern. If I can, I get a video of that flash of that specific firefly, and then try to net it. And once I net it, then I can, and you don't have to use a net depending on the species. Some species I have not been able to catch even with a 10-foot long net that I made. But other species you can catch with your hand, just as you may remember doing as a kid, and even some of the very interesting species. Anyway, so whatever way you catch them, The best way I've found to get a picture of them is to put them in a little Ziploc sandwich bag. Get most of the air out, but not all of it. And don't worry about them suffocating in the minute that you're taking pictures, because it's kind of like you being under a really heavy blanket for a couple of minutes or something like that. Then try to get photographs of the top side or dorsal and also the bottom side or ventral view, because there are diagnostic characters on the underside for some species. I would also, again, I don't want to get too far into phone settings, but if you can increase the resolution of the pictures that you were taking, that will allow you to crop to just the insect and have more detail if you can. I usually, when I put one in a plastic bag, I usually have a headlamp on so that way my hands are free. It's a little difficult to shine your headlamp on the firefly and take a picture with your cell phone and not have the shine or not have the shadow of the cell phone or the shine from the bag obscuring the specimen that you're trying to get pictures of. And we still have some time. Can I talk about a couple other quick topics?
Sure.
A couple of interesting fireflies. One is the winter firefly, and it's Elychnia coruscata. It's called the winter firefly, surprisingly enough, because it comes out in wintertime. As far as I know, there are only a couple of records for that or possibly a related undescribed species in Florida. But well north of Florida, they actually do come out in wintertime in places that snow. And Lynn Faust, who wrote Fireflies, Glowworms, and Lightning Bugs, basically wrote the book on fireflies for North America. She had documented four individuals that crawled up a tree trunk, and that's the other thing is they're not out in wintertime, kind of hidden down in insulative stuff. People actually find them in cracks in tree bark, and they're visible. Anyway, she found some. Four of them, and they survived down to negative 13 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that's not below freezing, that's below zero. And a few days later, when it warmed up a little bit, they crawled away, and they are perfectly fine. Not very many insects could survive that. I know I couldn't survive that, but I just thought that was interesting.
And that's found in Florida.
There are a couple of records for at least that genus. As we were
Okay.
talking about before, you can't quite say definitely. And I believe there are at least a couple of records even on iNaturalist for that species, or maybe an undescribed one. Anyway, if people want to go out staring at tree trunks in like late fall to really early spring, you might find one. I've tried. I haven't yet, but I haven't been in that many habitats. They apparently like large trees with cracks in the bark, and they also like somewhat spread out, like not a completely closed canopy above shading everything, but not totally open like a field with just a couple of trees. They want a decent number of trees around, but still some light getting through and stuff like that. I've heard that at night is the easiest way to find them, even though they do not flash. And the way to find them is using a headlamp. They apparently shine. Like not fluorescence or anything, but they apparently are pretty obvious with a headlamp at night. So anyway, if people want to go hiking around at night with headlamps in the wintertime, they should definitely do that. Something people might find if they search online for information about fireflies, you might find something about synchronous fireflies. And what you'll probably see is that, oh, those don't occur in Florida, they're in the Appalachians or something like that. And synchronous fireflies, as their name suggests, are ones that they not only flash, but once enough of them get in the same area, they sync up their flashing. So they're all flashing at the same exact time or same exact pattern, basically. And I have not seen it, but it's supposed to be really spectacular. Anyway, what you'll see is that those don't occur in Florida. That's not true. There's the Florida Single Snappy, which is Photurus Conjurer, and the Snappy Single Sync, which is Photurus Frontalis. And both of them, if they get in large enough numbers near each other, they will synchronize. And I know a spot that I want to go check out that I've heard that they're at, but I've not actually seen it myself.
So we know that, you know, the flash patterns and the color and the height are indicative of different species. If I see this and I kind of make a couple of notes, where do I go to find that information as far as guiding me to kind of maybe figure out what it might be?
Lynn Foss's book is basically the North American Firefly Bible. It is really well done. It has all the flash information. There's a little silhouette of each species that's life size, because fireflies do vary from, oh, I think 4 millimeters, which is less than a quarter inch, on up to maybe around an inch or so. I'd have to look. But anyway, it's called Fireflies, Glowworms, Lightning Bugs, Identification and Natural History of the Fireflies of the Eastern and Central United States and Canada. Also online, at least especially for rare species, if you look for the Xerces Society, and that's spelled X-E-R-C-E-S, I think.
I was looking at their pages. They actually have a lot of the sensitive species on there.
Yes.
And pictures and photos, obviously.
Oh, I was actually right, amazingly enough. It is X-E-R-C-E-S.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, yeah, they have a good bit of basic information about fireflies in general. They also have a thing sort of like iNaturalist, where they have a firefly atlas that you can put specific records for species into. And I would definitely suggest poking around on their website if you're interested in fireflies, and maybe hook up with their firefly atlas.
Right, and you sent me links to that. And I found some links to different species they assessed, and species they found were sensitive or vulnerable in some way. And a lot of them are in Florida. And we can link to that on the WFSU Ecology blog on the blog post for this podcast.
I think it's Richard Joyce from the Xerces Society and Lynn Foss, who wrote the Firefly book. They've been incredibly helpful with helping me figure out what's going on with fireflies in Florida. I could not have done what I've done without them, and I should have mentioned that before. I also should have mentioned that the Florida intertidal firefly has been petitioned by them for federal listing. It looks like now that some survey work has been done in Florida, partly by Richard Joyce and other people from Xerces, it's looking like it may be a little more common and a little more secure than was originally thought. And it also, there was some evidence that it may be less susceptible to light pollution than was thought, which is interesting.
It sounds like there's a lot we don't know about fireflies, and it doesn't seem like they'd be necessarily the easiest animal to study.
It would depend on the species. If it's one of those species that only comes out for 15 minutes and only comes out for maybe a few weeks out of the year, that's really difficult to study. You have to wait until, okay, it's not raining, it's not too cold, it's not too warm. I've got to be at this spot at exactly this time after sunset or at sunset, and then I've only got 15 or 20 minutes to collect data or figure anything out or anything. Those would be very difficult. Some of the ones that come out for longer in the year and longer during the evening, I think they'd be a little bit easier to study. But I just wish people would go out catching fireflies and getting pictures of them, putting records up on iNaturalist or with the Xerces Society Firefly Atlas, and get as many records out there as possible so that maybe we can find out what's going on with some of these. I mean, again, we're tracking at least two species that have not been seen in decades, as in none have been seen in decades in all of Florida. Do I think they're extinct? I doubt it, but who knows? But if enough people get out there, get enough pictures, get enough data, maybe we can figure that out.
Right. So right now it's early June. How many more months of sort of peak firefly season do we have if people want to get out there and get some photos?
I would say that pretty much any of the quote unquote warmer months would be fine. And again, there's that winter firefly if people really want to go after it. I'd have to check which species come out how late in the year? I mean, definitely through July and August, I would say. But I would have to check for others. Yeah, there are records through September at least. It looks like things might die down, but it looks like there are records for at least through September for fireflies in our general area of some sort.
And then with like any insect, really, I mean, just always being aware of them. I think once you start photographing insects and paying attention to it, and even if you have an affinity for one or the other, you kind of just start to notice insects all the time. And if you happen to have a camera, you get that at that time of year. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, one thing I may not have touched on, but maybe it won't fit into anything else, is when there's a Florida scrub dark firefly, and it's diurnal, and the flightless females live underground, and people think that the females use pheromones to attract the males rather than using light, which is somewhat interesting. I did forget. So the blue ghost firefly, or we'll say ghost fireflies in genus Phocis. I was talking about them before. The males are very, very small and they fly right above the ground. They're the ones I was talking about that just glow in kind of a line as they're flying above the ground. What I forgot to mention is that their females, the females of them, they also glow rather than flash or anything. But the females are larva form, meaning that they sort of look like the sort of caterpillar stage of a firefly. They never really grow up, even so they never even get wing pads or anything that looks like an exoskeleton. They look more like a tiny, tiny little grub than anything else.
This is all really interesting, and I hope people take an interest and maybe pay a little more attention.
I hope they do too. More people that we can get out documenting fireflies, the better.
Will you ever look at fireflies the same way again? And will you take a closer look? And perhaps a few photos? Photographing insects opens up a whole new world. On the one hand, if you use an app like iNaturalist, you begin to learn about our huge diversity of insects. When you learn about any one insect, what it needs for food and habitat, and what eats it, you end up learning about the place where you find it. The other thing that happens when you make a habit of looking for small things is you start noticing everything. When I walk through the forest, every plant is a hub of activity. Bare sand teems with life and death struggles, and you notice how many animals are digging their way beneath your feet. It might not be much different in your neighborhood or your yard. That noticing, that kind of awareness, that's what I try to make WFSU Ecology all about. I'm your host, Rob Diaz de Villegas. Taylor Cox was our audio engineer. As always, you can find the illustrated version of this podcast at wfsu.org/ecologyblog. Also on the blog, you can find my last adventure with Dave Onquist, where we headed to the Apalachicola National Forest in search of a rare bee. This has been Costa Canopy, a production of WFSU Public Media.